Let's go up to our ring announcer.
The following podcast is scheduled for one episode and is our vantage point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
Outside, we couldn't see it from our vantage point.
Wrestling fans, and welcome back to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Glad to be with you for episode number 45, Monday, August 21st, 2017. I am Joe Murata, alongside the Heartbreak Kid, Michael Quinn. How you doing, Quinn?
Howdy doody.
How you doing, man? It's SummerSlam happened yesterday.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
That means it's almost SummerSlam.
And you know what else happened yesterday, Michael? Personal note here, it was my wedding anniversary.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. You know how long I've been married? About 6 years.
Aha! Uh-huh. Just like Lou.
Just from, like Lou from the cooking.
For the single man, yeah.
How about 6 years?
6 years.
Folks, thanks so much for being with us. We are, of course, your Retro Wrestling Podcast. Glad to talk you through the world of retro wrestling. Have a great show in store for you. We're reviewing something very interesting later on. But before we get to any of that, we want to remind you of the usual things. You can reach us on Twitter at OVP Podcast. And there you can tweet things at us. You can mention stuff to us. And of course, there are the GIFs, Quinn.
Yes, always the GIFs.
We love the GIFs, yes.
Yeah, I saw one with Dean Coles where, like, Bobby the Brain and, like, Mean Gene were, like, acting like they were getting the scoops. That
oh, yeah?
That made me laugh.
They were getting scoops?
Yeah, they were, like, sneaking around, like, Disco Inferno was near a pool, something.
Oh, it was WCW.
Yeah, and, like, Sting was, like, he was sitting at, like, a table with, like, his Sting gear on, like, at a restaurant.
Do you think he really went out to eat like that?
No, and I don't think Mean Gene dressed up like a woman. to like disguise himself.
Well, folks, you can send us gifts like that, apparently, because those are out there. And you can also email us at ovppodcast@gmail.com. That is ovppodcast@gmail.com. We do take the long form emails, Michael.
Yes, we do.
And we try to get back to you as much as we can, as fast as we can.
Yes, but please leave a return address so I'm not writing entire novels to, like, nobody.
That did happen recently.
Yeah.
Quinn, we have a Facebook group that has been very active lately, and what goes on there exactly?
It's heating up like NBA Jam. Well, you can go over to it and get on that heating pad, whatever it is. You can go over to facebook.web and type in our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast and join the group, not the other thing.
Like the auxiliary page.
Yeah, the PR page or whatever. Don't join that.
That's, the Yelp page.
You can't even join it. You go to the group.
And you can talk to us there and other people.
Yes.
All the fans.
All of them.
Including Scott Keith occasionally.
Yes, sometimes.
If you need something,
yeah.
You can request his presence by tagging him.
Or you can talk
him
to, like, Marty or...
Yeah, Ruben Vasquez is on there. A lot of fans.
Yeah.
All the best. All the OVP gang, as we say.
Yes.
And Quinn, we're hosted on SoundCloud, I mean, at least for now. Now that they didn't go out of business recently.
Until they almost go out of business the next time.
But that's not really where we would recommend listening to us. You can actually get us on other sources, Quinn. Like what?
Right. You can go over to Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
And you can hit the subscribe button where it will then send the podcast through electrical means to your wireless device. I don't know how it works. Science, something
science,
like that.
Yes.
And then after you subscribe,
right,
you can leave a review.
Yeah.
Again, through the electrical means.
Yeah.
Yes. And then you hit it and then you say, this was a good podcast, 5 stars, or this sucked balls,
5 stars.
5 stars. Yeah.
Where else can you find us besides that?
Well, you can go on Google Play, Stitcher.
Yep.
Blueberry.
Who cares?
Oh boy.
Wow.
And Odo and various other places.
Various other places. Not to mention, of course, the Place to Be Nation. That is placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world. There's some great podcasts on there. The Place to Be podcast, Gwen, one of yours there in 1986. Now, one of your favorites, I should say. You know,
yes.
Scott and JT walk you through the World Wrestling Federation of 1986.
The wonderful world of 1986.
Yes. And, you know, on their pro wrestling only feed, Michael,
Oh, yeah?
Our little brother show.
Oh, Little Petey.
Little Petey with Greetings from Allentown. He does a great show. It comes out on Thursday mornings, and he does it all by his lonesome.
Yes.
Sounds very sad.
I feel for him. Don't worry, Petey.
One day, buddy.
One day.
One day. But you can go to placetobenation.com and check out those great podcasts. And, of course, our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast is part of that family, so we're very appreciative of that. Michael.
Yes?
Did you know that there's a T shirt? The OVT is available.
Would it happen to be at teespring.feet? What is it?
It's actually teespring.com.
Oh, thank you.
That is teespring.com/OVP podcast. It is a white t-shirt with a big logo that says Our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast on there. And if you want to, you can buy it. And if you don't want to, that's fine also.
Yeah, you can wear it at your favorite wrestling events across the nation.
That's right.
Or even across the waters.
Yep.
Not the pond. Here. Yeah, you wear it at the things and they're like, oh, what's that?
Yeah, and then they listen to it and they're like, oh,
this is about wrestling.
Yeah. No, we don't do that. But folks, thank you for doing that. So, and Quinn, one more thing we should mention, we haven't plugged it in a while, is we have a YouTube page.
Oh yeah.
Which will be updated soon with some more great content coming your way, folks.
There's things coming.
There's some stuff in the works, right?
We have plans.
There are plans.
Master plans.
So you would go to YouTube.com and type in Our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast. And there's some good stuff in there, some YouTube-exclusive content.
Yes.
Sometimes if we get bored, we'll just be like, hey, let's do a video.
Yeah, unfortunately, those are very unplanned. But if you subscribe to the page, we'll send an alert when we're like watching it. And you'll be like,
exactly.
Oh, they're watching it? Well, I'll watch it with them.
There you go. So, folks, let's head right into our first topic of the day, which is why did they bother? And, Quinn, we're going to talk today about why a certain promotion bothered bringing in a certain writing pair. I'm going to take you back, folks, to September of 1999. Ratings were extraordinarily high for the World Wrestling Federation, Michael.
And that's not to say they weren't extraordinarily high for everything in wrestling.
That's very true. WCW was still pulling strong ratings, somewhat lagging behind the WWF at that point.
I would say lagging behind for the boom period.
Yeah.
I mean, they're better than anything Raw even gets now.
Of course.
What WCW was even getting back then.
But if WWE was doing fives and sixes, WCW was probably doing twos and threes by that point.
Exactly.
And the creative mastermind, and you can decide if I'm using that term loosely or not, was Vince Russo. Russo, as we all know, and his writing partner, Michael, since 1998, Ed Ferrara.
Oklahoma?
Yeah, Oklahoma.
And here this little fucking prick comes along from writing Duckman or whatever the fuck he did in California.
In September or October of 1999, Vince Russo had had enough. He was like, I'm done. I am done working for Vince McMahon.
Now, do you know why?
He was overworked.
Yes.
They had just started doing SmackDown.
Yeah, apparently the last straw was he had just had kids and he, you know, asked for, you know, a little lighter of a schedule so he could spend time with his kids.
Yep.
And Vince said to him something of the term, why don't you just get a nanny?
Yep. And I get it.
And that was the last straw for him.
And I get it.
Yeah.
I mean, like him or not, and for the record, folks, we are not giant Vince Russo fans, but we also don't think he's the worst thing ever.
No. I think that was the wrong thing to say to him on Vince McMahon's part.
I think it was. If that's the true story, maybe a little callous. But like him or hate him, you know, and a lot of people hate him. I don't hate him. And I don't think you do either, Quinn.
I don't.
You look like him, too, apparently.
Apparently, according to everyone on our boards and Twitter.
Go to YouTube and find out.
Yeah.
He left. And what I want to ask you, Michael, is why did WCW bother bringing Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara in as their head writers during that period of time?
I mean, I can sort of understand the thinking, but at the same time, I kind of don't.
Okay.
Because on one hand, you could say, well, the ratings are down and we need fresh things, right?
Sure.
But on the other hand, who the hell gave a shit about the stories? If you really think about it, back then, the stories weren't good.
No, it was character-driven.
Yeah, it was character-driven.
And Russo could make a character interesting.
Yeah.
I will give him that.
But you know who built the characters mostly?
Vince.
Vince.
Vince
exactly.
And company.
Vince McMahon. Not Vince, Vince,
yes.
Russo.
Vince McMahon. Yeah. The Vince, you know? Yeah.
The big, big Vince.
Life sucks, and then you die!
And what happened, basically, is when Vince Russo came in, Quinn, if you recall, and if any of you listening at home recall, Russo and Ferrara pretty much tried to make it WWF.
WWF on like steroids.
Yes.
Like the attitude part of it,
yes,
amplified.
That's a good way. The attitude era part of it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all of a sudden we're getting all kinds of hardcore matches and much more scantily clad women and stupid stipulations and
yep,
shorter matches. Everything that people didn't care about,
yeah,
with the attitude era. What, yeah, did people care about Quinn in the attitude era?
Cared about the characters.
Steve Austin.
Yes, Steve Austin, The Rock, and they cared about their interactions and them,
right,
you know, interacting with other characters.
DX,
yeah,
Vince McMahon,
right,
the heel character, storylines that had a purpose, right,
right, and intersecting storylines.
Correct. Did you specifically watch Raw to see like a mud fight between women?
No,
it happened and you're like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, and it was something that was like, you know, like the second thing on the show or something.
Yes, like, and no one cared.
Yeah,
really,
it was just like a time filler.
We love puppies.
And that's one of the hallmarks of Russo, is a lot of time filler,
right,
you know, that were a bit salacious, a bit risque for the time, so
and,
to speak.
And it has a lot to do with that he was more of a TV guy. Like, he was thinking, how do I occupy this time on my program so that they won't change the channel?
Correct.
Because this isn't really what I want to show them. I just need to keep them here for 2 hours.
Correct. It's like a dangling carrot almost,
right?
Right,
exactly.
But one of the things that suffered in WCW was, when you had the classic WWF WCW competition,
right,
let's say from like 94, 95 until 98, 99,
yeah,
the best thing about it is that they weren't the same.
No, they weren't at all. They were nothing like the WWF.
And especially when it was the NWA days, but even in the 90s, even at the height of the NWO and everything, you had WCW as its own separate entity with its own separate identity.
Right. And the thing with this whole Vince Russo thing is, I believe Bischoff was out at that point.
He was let go in September of 99, yes.
Right. So Bischoff had like a vision for how this thing should look. It, like him or not, he did. His thing was, I want to have the NWO be like the counterculture, the like not respecting the classic wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Then I want to have these classic wrestlers like Ric Flair and like, I guess DDP would be under that banner type.
Yeah.
Of, you know, but I'm saying, I mean that like opposing
Sting.
The NWO. Like, yes, yeah, Sting.
Guys like that.
Guys like that who was like, they came from that that wrestling aspect.
Right.
You know how like world championship wrestling,
yeah,
on TBS.
We wrestle where the big boys play.
Yeah, it's like we're about sports and shit.
Sure. Sports and shit.
Yeah.
Vince Russo kind of took a sledgehammer to that whole thing.
Oh, yes, he did.
Because he's not really a wrestling fan.
No.
Honestly, he doesn't really have the respect for, you know, he doesn't respect the NWA. Are you kidding me? Or
hell
any
no.
tradition of wrestling?
Yeah.
No way. And whether he has to or not, fine. But when you alienate your audience,
yep,
that is not a good thing. And that's kind of what Vince Russo did.
Yeah.
You had freaking Ed Ferrara coming in parodying JR as Oklahoma.
That was awful.
You make me feel like a natural woman.
It was offensive. It was stupid. Why are we picking on JR?
Right.
Like, Vince McMahon picks on him on his show.
Stone Cold! Stone Cold! Stone Cold!
I know, that's bad enough.
Do we need more of it?
Right.
Like, were we looking for that?
And how many on a pole matches, for crying out loud?
Oh,
tequila,
yeah,
bottle on a pole, Viagra on a pole,
mm-hmm,
Judy Bagwell on a pole.
Well, that was kind of funny.
It was kind of funny.
That was the only one that was actually kind of funny.
And suffice to say, folks, by January of 2000, Vince Russo was out the door for the first time.
Yeah.
And in his place was Kevin Sullivan,
which
to
they
try to turn things around. Yes.
And this is what I always say about Kevin Sullivan. They always, 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 WWE's history was everything's all fucked up. Give it to Kevin Sullivan and
yeah,
like hope to hell he can fix it. This guy always got like the shittiest shit, like as far as like a booker, like
right,
dropped on him.
Right. It's true.
Yeah.
And let's go back to this fact here. Russo's tenure was like 3 months. That should show you how successful it was. His initial tenure.
Initially.
Was
yeah,
3 months. So apparently he didn't come in and immediately double the ratings like they thought he would, or whatever the hell their thinking was. And that's the whole point, Quinn. Why would they think that that would work?
I'm assuming they thought that whatever things writing wise,
yeah,
like they thought that that was the missing piece.
Right.
Like it wasn't that like we're still using Hulk Hogan, you know, or that, you know, the NWO has been around for like way too long.
Right.
And I don't recall them like letting Russo completely like demolish the NWO right away.
I don't remember how the whole NWO thing shook out. No, he rebuilt
or NWO. I'm sorry. Yeah, I said NWA, didn't I?
He rebuilt the NWO, Quinn. The NWO 2000 was him with Bret Hart.
Okay, yes.
You wrestling fans are such stupid idiots.
But why? Why would that work?
I don't know.
That's the whole thing. Yeah, you said it perfectly. They thought the missing piece was the writing staff. And I'll tell you what, unless Russo was bringing Steve Austin and The Rock over to WCW with him.
Yeah, that wasn't going to change anything.
It wasn't going to And Vince McMahon with him?
He had Bret Hart at the beginning.
Yeah, but so did Bischoff, and he didn't do dick with him either.
I'm saying they had that, like, when Russo came in, they had Bret Hart.
They had Bret Hart, and you know, what did he do? He fought Chris
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of what the fans wanted at the time.
And then he turned heel.
Yeah.
And he was in the NWO reformation, you know, that no one cared about.
NWO 2000, yeah.
And the silver and black, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, Bischoff is hired back with Vince Russo.
This was weird.
In April of 2000.
With the gray hair.
Yeah, Bischoff with the gray hair.
And Vince Russo is back in charge again.
But now Russo, of course, needs to be an on-screen character because, hell, Bischoff had done it, Vince McMahon had done it, so why not Vince Russo? And he was all over the show, if you recall. Remember that Thunder we watched?
Oh, God.
From 2000?
He's everywhere. And the most notable thing I remember him being involved with was his whole thing with Ric Flair and, like, his son.
David, right?
Yeah. And then they, like, go to Ric Flair's house and, like...
Charlotte there?
Yeah, she's Charlotte's young. Like, don't come in! Like, and then they just, like, rummage through his stuff or something.
This
like,
is Ric Flair's underwear.
Yeah, his robes or something, yeah.
This stinks.
You know what he's doing here for 21 years! You made his life a living hell! You are a witch! And this little mite! Watch it, Sonny!
And basically... We all know how 2000 WCW went, right?
Yeah.
So again, Vince Russo wasn't going to be the answer there.
They needed a counterbalance to Russo.
And it wasn't Bischoff.
Yeah, Bischoff. That wasn't... Bischoff had to have, like, complete control or he was useless.
In order
useless.
To run the company, like, right? And he didn't have control in 2000. So basically, they kind of fizzle out. The notable thing that I like that Vince Russo did, and I don't know what the public opinion is on this, is that whole fucking promo from Bash at the Beach 2000 on Hulk Hogan, where he's like, you're a bald-headed piece of shit, and you stink, and I don't like you.
And doesn't that lead to, like, this is why this company's in the shape it's in thing?
That whole thing.
Yeah, that's fun.
It's fun.
However, that was, like,
it's embarrassing. Yeah.
Of the problems there. And this leads me back around to why did they actually bother?
Mm-hmm.
Or what was the real problem? Not why did they bother, because we know why they bothered. They bothered because they thought that this would fix it, right?
And it didn't.
The problem was creative control, mostly.
You nailed it.
It's the idea that the wrestler can just make their own storylines up, but if you bring this guy in to be the writer, and then, like, Hulk Hogan just be like, I'm not doing that, brother. Like, it doesn't do anything. Like, it's bullshit.
It's
like,
true. And not only that, I mean, you bring in Vince Russo. Look, how many ideas can the guy really have in the tank to begin with? He had been going whole hog since 97.
And a thing with that is, like, Russo tried his hardest, and I'll give him credit. One of his solutions to this problem, and I don't think a lot of people notice it, but I did. If you notice, he groups all the people with creative control into a faction.
The Millionaires Club.
Right. So that, like, they're, like, in this, like, contained field. Like, if you really think about it, that's kind of what he did.
And a couple other positive things he did is he really did try to elevate some of the younger guys.
Yes.
He was always a big proponent of that. Booker T being one of the key examples there.
And that was the idea behind the New Blood. But, you know, if you have the New Blood, they have... no control creatively.
Yeah, and that was bad.
And if they're feuding with the Millionaires Club, which is a bunch of guys who create, that backfired. It all of a sudden, like, somehow the New Blood's the heels.
That was horrible.
Like, it's what?
That feud was backwards.
Yeah.
So overall, Quinn, do you think they should have bothered?
In hindsight, I don't think they should have. However, at the time, it kind of made sense.
I guess I could see why. Like, it seemed like a big coup at the time, right?
Right, it did.
You're getting the WWF guys. The WWF is awesome, right? That's a casual fan's reaction.
Yeah.
Oh, they're going to make it so good. But all it was Hugh Erection and fucking Mrs. Hancock and all these, like, sexual puns.
Not that Mrs. Hancock was bad.
Michael.
But,
and all these, like,
Miss. not Miss, she wasn't married yet.
But all these sexual puns and really short matches and retirements and things on a pole, why would that fix the company?
No. again, ultimately it failed because you brought in a new creative guy with a company full of people who can override him.
Fair point. And a guy with a limited amount of ideas, I think, too, is a fair thing to put on Russo.
It's fair.
He's
not
going to have, like, brand new ideas all the time to fix things.
So when you mix that all together, you get that.
You get going out of business in 2001 because people are sick of this shit.
Or you get, like, Ric Flair having to essentially, like, take over the show.
Yeah.
Like, remember near the end, it's literally just like Ric Flair promos because they don't know what else to do.
That
nothing's written. So they're like, who's the only guy that we have on the entire roster who can just ad lib for like a half an hour so we can kill that time? Ric Flair.
Yeah, exactly. Well, folks, speaking of killing time, thank you for doing that with us. And let us know what you think about Vince Russo and WCW and if they should have bothered. We will be back right after this.
Is this your deal, Russo? That's why this company's in the damn shape it's in, because of bullshit like this.
From day one, I've done nothing but deal with the bullshit of the politics behind that curtain. The fact of the matter is, I've got a wife, I've got three kids at home, and I really don't need this shit. I came back for every one of the guys in that locker room that week in, week out, bust their ass for WCW. And let me tell you who doesn't give a shit about this company. That goddamn politician Hulk Hogan. Hogan got his belt and he went the hell home, and I promise everybody, or else I'll go in the goddamn grave, you will never see that piece of shit again.
From Harley Race to Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair to The Rock, Sting to Steve Austin, you're listening to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Glad to be with you for episode number 45, Monday, August 21st, 2017. Hope you're having a good day so far. Michael Quinn, we are here to do Mount Rushmore and Death Valley, where each week Quinn and I will put four of the best of something onto Mount Rushmore and four of the worst go down into the desert of Death Valley. Michael Quinn, as you well know, sir, we are taking requests, and there are tons of them, and I guess we should mention you can find the OVP suggestion box on our website.
Yes, at ovppodcast.com. Go on the top, you'll see suggestions, and whammo, you can add it in.
Whammo!
You can put your name, whatever.
Whammo?
Yeah, whammo.
Does it say that when you put your name in?
By blammo. Ren and Stimpy, remember that?
Yes, I do. And you can just simply go to that Google spreadsheet there and put in your name, your suggestion, and we will do our very best to get to it. Quinn, you have the pick this week for the Mount Rushmore and Death Valley. What are we talking about?
Well, this week I thought this was a really good one by Jacob Georgeson.
Okay.
It is the Mount Rushmore and Death Valley of Hulk Hogan feuds.
Hulk Hogan feuds.
Yes.
Well, he had a lot of them.
He had a lot of good ones and a lot of bad ones.
He had a lot of bad ones, too. Okay, well, the Hulkster, obviously. We don't talk about him enough on this show, right,
yeah,
Quinn?
Always.
Marty Howell will be happy about this one.
Oh, he'll be ecstatic.
I see Hogan making another appearance. He's, by default, he's in every single one.
So, should we nominate, like, Hulk Hogan versus Hulk Hogan? No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, well, Hulk Hogan had a bunch of good feuds in WWF and WCW, and a bunch of bad ones. And I guess, Quinn, since you had the pick, or Jacob Georgeson had the pick, I have the stick, right?
You do have the stick, sir.
All right, well, I think Hogan, one of Hogan's best feuds, and definitely drew a lot of money. It's very interesting. It had some good matches. Will be Hulk Hogan versus Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff.
Ah, yes.
86, 87.
Very good pick.
That was a good one, right?
Yeah, that one, it was short from what I remember.
It wasn't that long, maybe under a year.
Yes, but it culminated in a fantastic match on Saturday Night's Main Event, of all places. Usually, Saturday Night's Main Event was a hype vehicle for, like, something bigger.
For something, yeah.
But this was, like,
this was a big
blow-off.
This
was for this. Like, yeah,
exactly. That was the steel cage match where they both went over the cage at the same time.
Yeah, and their feet both touched kind of at the same time. But not
Hogan
really.
Won, yeah. And of course, the feud kicked off with Orndorff turning on Hogan in 86.
Yes.
And then the big match at the big event in August of 86. Very strange pay-per-view.
Yeah.
But a really, really good match.
Yeah, it's fine. So it's a great feud.
That was a big feud, and it made Hogan look vulnerable. And it was before Hogan was such a whack-off, you know? 86, yeah. Hogan's good.
He treated Mr. Wonderful like he was something. And you know what was so great about their big blow-off in the cage?
Yeah.
Is that Wonderful came to the ring with Hogan's music.
Yeah, he was
doing
that,
right?
So
when they both went over,
yes.
Hogan's music played, and he didn't know who won.
Yep, and obviously Jesse Ventura was like ardently supporting Mr. Wonderful the whole time, which was really cool touch. Yeah. He's like, hey, if Mr. Wonderful was bald, Hogan wouldn't be champion.
He does say that.
That whole line.
Hogan would not be the champion if Mr. Wonderful was bald.
Because he holds him by the hair to prevent him to get out.
Exactly. Do you want to volley one, or can we agree to put that on? What do you think?
Well, let's put a few out there first.
Okay, no problem.
I want to nominate Hulk Hogan versus Randy Savage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, right? I mean, that was... That feud began the day Savage walked in the door, I feel like, in 85.
It did. He was, from the moment he arrived, he was like, I'm after you, Hogan, like, basically.
Like, what the hell? He just storms in. He's like, no, I'm better than Hogan.
Well, he is, but that's for opinion, but.
Yeah, Hulk Hogan with no fear at all, Billy Redlands. I mentioned that name and no problem.
But, like, really, they had, like, all these MSG and Boston Garden, all these house shows in 85, 86.
Right.
Savage won by count out a couple of times. Normally, Hogan won. Then it was kind of put on hold.
Right.
While they did other things.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, we all know the Mega Powers angle.
Right.
Was really a vehicle for them to feud again.
Exactly. And it was done very well with that whole, you know, Savage kind of, you know, making little faces.
Yeah.
When
we talked about that recently, right?
Miss Elizabeth up and stuff.
So,
and it's very subtle. And the moment they finally, like, break up in the, like, hospital room or whatever.
Which our friend Petey reviewed recently. Yep.
Yeah, that is awesome. That's,
what a
iconic
segment.
Like,
and it was
I remember
on prime
that.
Time, too. It was on primetime television, I mean, on NBC.
Yeah, that was, wasn't that one of the main events?
The main event, too. Yep.
But I'm going to tell you something right now. Those eyes right there. Those eyes. Lust Elizabeth. You understand that? You got
my face.
You got lust for Elizabeth right there.
Great feud. That's neck and neck with Orndorff. I mean, the Savage Hogan one was longer, more nuanced, more intricate.
Yeah, and it had a lot of stuff afterwards, too.
Well, there was... Yeah, I'd say the height of it was WrestleMania 5. After that, I wish it never happened.
Actually, let's just bring this up right here, because I'm thinking here.
Okay,
go
ahead.
Does this sag down the feud? So after their big WrestleMania 5, like, blow-off, right?
Hogan wins, yeah.
Then... It proceeds to turn into Savage just gets shit on for a year by Hulk Hogan. It's like, first of all, Hogan's got his manager now.
Elizabeth.
And then Savage brings in Sherry.
The evil twin.
The evil twin, basically. But, like, she's always, like, getting, like, beat up and stuff.
Looking stupid.
Looking stupid.
Stirring a cauldron.
Yes. And she's, like, a witch or something.
Then there's Zeus.
Yeah, and then now there's Zeus.
And so Beefcake.
Yeah, and Savage is associated with a loser. And then you got Hogan with another idiot and Brutus Beefcake.
Really?
So this thing just keeps going. And then finally, they kind of like end it for a period of time with this thing where they were supposed to fight each other, but have Mike Tyson there.
Yeah, main event three.
Yeah, but then...
And it was Buster Douglas.
And Tyson loses in Tokyo.
And then that main event match in 90.
Yeah, with Buster Douglas.
Oh, God.
And that's kind of the end of it. And then it just keeps, like, happening in WCW, too. Like,
yeah, the second Savage storms into WCW, he's like, oh, Hulk Hogan, I'm coming for you. What the fuck?
So, like, does all of this, like, extracurricular crap, like, you know...
Can we break it into sections? Can we say the Hogan-Savage feud from WWF?
Yeah.
Only? Would that make it? Because, I mean, at least it wasn't... They went on, like, 95, they were, like, at odds. 98, they were at odds. 97, they were at odds.
Yeah.
They were always at odds in WCW, except briefly. I don't know. So does Hogan Orndorff just get the spot then, the first spot?
I'll give it to that, and we'll discuss Hogan and Savage later.
Okay. So for number one, we'll be Hulk Hogan versus Paul Orndorff. You know, Michael.
Yes.
It is worth mentioning that the Hogan-Andre feud is a damn good one as well, because there were two phases to it. The 1980 version.
Yes.
And the 87-88 version.
Now, do you really count the 1980 version, though? Because, like,
I think
Hogan's not even anybody then.
He was Hulk Hogan.
He's almost Thunderlips.
He was like, not, yeah, but he was still a pretty damn big deal, so much so that AWA scooped him up when Vince Sr. let him go.
Why? Because he wore a cape?
Like, yeah, it might have been the cape.
And they had Freddie Blassie, who was taking his career down the toilet at that point.
He was impressive, though, no?
Yeah.
Really? So we're disqualifying that part of it?
I just think he was just, he's the equivalent of the big fat heels he would fight before just for Andre at that point.
All right, well then, Hogan Savage is the best one I can think of, unless you got another one.
No, well, I think that the Andre stuff, unlike the Savage stuff, it actually like enhances it.
Okay, well, let's go through it real quick. We all know the several Piper's Pit segments to kick it off.
Right.
Well, first of all, it starts in 84 with the dumping of the champagne by Andre.
Right. Oh, you're the champion.
Nice of you.
That's nice of you.
And then, you know, several years later, Piper, Jesse Ventura stirring up some shit, right? Well,
right.
Piper's not. Jesse Ventura stirring up some shit. Bobby Heenan comes out.
Right.
Blah, blah. I hear a challenger for world champion.
Tag titles, Hustlemania.
I'm there for one reason. To challenge you for a world championship match in the WrestleMania.
Right, yeah. Hustlemania.
The Hustlemania.
No,
the
we're friends,
belts.
Andre.
Yeah.
No, yeah. No, you're bleeding.
You're bleeding. So he rips the crucifix thing off, right?
And he's bleeding.
And that, for a lot of people, is a big deal.
Yeah, I guess it was.
Yeah, because I still hear people mention that, like, as part of the feud, like, oh, ho, ho, like, he ripped his necklace off,
yeah.
And Hogan always wore it.
And what's pretty amazing is they have this, you know, we don't need to talk about the match. We've talked about the match a lot. They have the WrestleMania 3 match. Andre dies right after.
Right.
And then somehow he's resurrected.
Yeah.
Right? In time for...
Just in time for that main event.
Survivor Series, he's like, I don't like you.
Yeah.
And then main event,
yeah.
February of 88, which we've also talked about, Million Dollar Man is now in the picture.
Right.
So Andre's going to win it for Mr. DiBiase.
Diabetes, or whatever he says.
Tag Team Championship.
This is no surprise. I told you I was going to win the World Tag Team Championship.
So he does, right? But he doesn't really, because Hogan got his shoulder up, and how much money for the plastic surgery?
Right.
Identical.
I can see the dollar bills falling out of the ref's pockets, all that nonsense.
But then he surrenders the Tag Team Championship to Ted DiBiase.
Yes, I surrender.
So they have the worst match ever at WrestleMania 4.
Right, with the, like, chairs and stuff.
Awful. Yeah. And then the big blow-off is at WrestleFest 88 in the cage, July of 88, and that was kind of really it.
WrestleFest.
Yeah, WrestleFest 88,
that's
man.
That's weird that that's the blow-off.
Weird event.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, that was definitely the... That has to go on there,
that
Quinn.
Has to, because...
Has to go
okay,
on there.
So, this is the main reason. Out of all of this, like, it starts off, like, junky. It's just, like, some Shea Stadium match. But it turns into the biggest attendance of, like, ever.
Yeah, 78,000, if you believe Dave Meltzer.
93,173. Shut up, Meltzer.
Match.
Yeah.
So I would have to say he probably gave that match a shitty rating. But I would have to say that's one of the all-time great feuds of WWF ever.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Just of WWF.
Yeah, I'm surprised it wasn't the first we nominated, but it's definitely in there.
So we put it on, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's get it on there. Hogan Andre for number two.
Okay, so the next one I want to nominate, how about the Ultimate Warrior feud? What do you think of this? Because some people say it's great, and some people don't like it.
I don't know that, like, it was a feud, but it wasn't, here's the problem with it.
Okay.
It wasn't so much a feud as it was, like, Jack Tunney was like, we're going to have them fight each other. And then they did. And they're like, I'm going to beat you. I'm going to kill your plane, Hulk Hogan, and all
planes
that.
Planes into buildings, whatever. But it did start well with that whole, like, at the Royal Rumble thing.
Yes, it did, with the double crisscross of Doom,
right,
and all
yeah.
that. And then the Saturday Night's Main Event tag match against Perfect and Genius.
Yes, and then them, like, saving each other or something.
Like, but, like, assily.
Yeah, like, Ultimate Warrior runs away like an idiot.
You know what? Like, yeah, when Earthquake had the brown, like, trunks on, and
it
was really weird.
Yeah, what was that about? That was
know.
Weird. yeah.
Well, you know what? I guess it's no worse in terms of build than the Hogan Andre.
Right.
The short-term build of it was good.
Right.
They had you didn't need back then a million video packages and stare downs and matches with each other before the match.
Right. Yeah, you didn't. You didn't.
Back then, you didn't have that, really.
People just saw it once, and they were like, I want to see that, and they had to wait, like, 6 months, so they were, like, you know, they were, like, champing at the bit to see it.
Champing. Yeah. I like that you always say that correctly, as you informed me a couple years ago.
Yeah, that's the correct terminology.
Look it up, folks. You know what? Yeah, and again, another great match.
Yes.
Another good moment.
One of the better Hogan matches.
Yeah, and one of the better Warrior matches, too.
But the thing is all the nonsense afterwards, and that might be, like, Death Valley material, so let's hold off on putting it in.
Okay, so we've got that and Hogan Savage. Really? Hogan Savage is in abeyance?
Well, just because of
other things.
Other things.
Well, I've got one for you then. Hulk Hogan, Roddy Piper, 85.
That's a definitively good Hogan feud.
That was WrestleMania 1. I mean, that was the basis of it anyway.
Before we get started, I want to fast forward to the end with the whole WCW thing. I don't think, even though that happens, it's actually like, I've rewatched it recently. It's not as offensive as I remembered it. It's more just like a nostalgia thing.
Their 96 feud.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, I'll fight you one more time, brother. Or, you know what I mean? Like, it's nothing. It doesn't really matter. Such good work was done beforehand that I think it negates it in this circumstance.
Okay, so then is this a legitimate contender, you think?
I think it's a legit contender.
It was Hogan. It was a really big feud for Hogan in 85.
Right.
And they had the blow-off, I get. The pay-per-view blow-off was at the Wrestling Classic.
Right.
The one-on-one match. I know that, I don't know that Hogan ever pinned him clean.
He never beat Piper. Like,
never
legit.
Pinned him clean, right?
It's one of the only people.
Because Piper never lost clean, really.
No. Now.
Which says something.
The thing with all, yeah, no, it does. The thing with all this is that I think it's really punctuated by the war to settle the score.
Right before WrestleMania.
Right.
They have a match there too, right?
Right. And that's, to a lot of people remember that as like one of the big moments in the long-term feud of these two.
And that was on MTV.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
Yeah, and they carried that momentum of that feud into the WrestleMania the month later.
Right. The first WrestleMania is headlined basically by this feud.
Like, That's the main thing.
Yeah, they need to have tag partners essentially to build tea into it.
Exactly.
But like, yeah, it's basically like what people want to see is Hulk Hogan fight Roddy Piper.
It was a good feud.
Yeah.
I mean,
and this is coming from a guy that was just doing like interview segments. Like, and somehow it's like one of Hogan's best feuds.
Well, Piper could talk.
Yeah.
And he was so the opposite of a typical Hogan heel.
Yeah.
Normally you have the big fat guy.
Right, but he's like squirmy, kind of. Like, yeah. He's like a slime ball.
You know what I've noticed? The other two, well, Andre's not a big fat heel. He's Andre the Giant.
He's Andre.
But all the other ones we've mentioned,
yeah.
Orndorff, Savage, and Warrior, none of them are big fat heels.
Right, exactly. And those are feuds people like with Hogan.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm comfortable putting Piper on.
I want to put Piper in first here.
Really? You just want to, you don't think anything can knock it off?
I don't. Because the last one I have to offer is like maybe, but I don't think it would knock this one off.
I'll put Hogan Piper in. It was damn good. It's damn entertaining. Piper could talk, especially in 85 could Piper talk.
Right, yeah.
And Hogan was likable in 85 still.
Yeah.
He was actually like pretty good.
Yeah, it was like his height.
It really was. I mean, it was his early height.
It's probably Hogan's height feud, basically. It's his
that
feud.
And Andre. I mean, yeah. those Orndorff
two,
and Andre.
Those two are like the golden period of Hulk Hogan.
85 to 87 were like his best years,
yeah,
really. So, you know what? I'll put it on. Piper deserves it, too. I mean, he was awesome in that whole thing.
Yeah, he was good.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's do it. For number three, Hogan Piper. So we've got Orndorff, Andre, and Piper. We need one more. What was the one you were going to say?
The Undertaker.
You think? I don't know.
Well, I'll say this. It's one of the rare like moments where Hogan like surprisingly loses. Like, and I think it's very memorable because of that.
Well, Yoko beat him too, though, Michael.
Yes, but this was more stunning because of when it took place. It's in
91.
It's not like at the tail end when people know Hogan's on the way out the door.
Now, that was kind of in the middle of the Ric Flair Hogan feud, though, from 91.
Right.
So what do you think about that? The Flair.
The Flair, but the Undertaker thing was interesting because it was Hogan running into, instead of a normal big fat heel, it's like a phenom. Like
a big tall zombie, right?
A zombie. Like Hogan running into like the mystical crap. Like, and I'm sure that's what they were probably thinking with the Papa Shango nonsense.
Well, that was a whole different ball game there.
Yeah, but I don't know. The Undertaker's memorable. That, and it also continues. It does. You recall,
it continues.
When Hogan regains the title in like the 2000s.
Yeah.
The Undertaker.
That's the worst fucking thing Hogan did in 02, though. Remember that?
Yeah, he did. He beat the
awful.
Undertaker for the title, right?
I don't know. Or Undertaker beat him, I think.
I think he beat the Taker.
No. Oh,
did it go the other way?
He beat Triple H.
Oh, right. Right, right. You're correct.
Which, weird, right?
It's funny that we remember it like all lopsided.
He beat Triple H, Undertaker beat Hogan.
Right. So they
reversed it. Why did Booger Red have the world title in 02? Like the Booger Red version.
Because Booger Red.
Well, because of that, this can't make it. Hogan Savage, Quinn. Come on. Are we out of our minds here? That feud, the real version of it from 85 to like 89 is incredible.
It's
and I
so
know they had,
diluted, though.
Quinn, the good stuff is better. It cancels out the dilution.
Okay, one more.
Fine.
One more.
One more.
The Flair feud.
WWF.
And WCW.
And WCW.
They never really made Flair look dumb. That's debatable.
That's debatable. Well, what was his first big feud with the NWO? Was it just like the WCW in general?
Yeah, but the whole thing with that was the Four Horsemen were fighting amongst themselves like while the NWO was happening initially.
Right.
So it's like basically they were like distracted with each other.
And that's kind of when Piper ran in, right?
Yeah.
And then after that it was Sting. I guess we can get to that. I don't know about Sting, do you?
Sting.
The 97. I mean, that was
that's
there was
another
so
good
much-
one, yeah.
So much intrigue to that and so much interest, but it wasn't a good feud because Sting was never really there, really talk. I mean, maybe that is why it's good.
Okay. On one hand,
yeah,
Starrcade 97,
mm-hmm.
Some people, not wrestling purists or whatever like us, but some people
were
fondly
purists?
Remember that.
I don't.
I think they do because... If you were a smaller child, if you weren't our age,
yeah,
this is like the big hero winning. You don't really care why he won. Like,
okay. But really, was that a good feud? If you really think about it.
It was kind of cool, actually. It was way different than any feud of the time. It was basically like, I'm not really going to fight you. I'm going to kind of outsmart you.
Right.
Because, like, how do you fight a guy with 100 goons around him? Mm. Like, you can't just fight him. Like,
well, with a baseball bat.
Right, but
and
it was
Bret Hart.
But he kind of did it like stealthily, like he would come from the ceiling and surprise them and like knock them all out, and then point the bat at Hogan. And,
yeah,
like,
yeah. And
it had a lot of hype.
Dragged on for months and months and months, and they finally got to it, and it was disappointing. I don't know, Hogan Savage, Quinn, are you out of your mind?
I just
what are you doing here?
I just want to put everything out.
Are you afraid of Marty Howell? Because our perceived bias against mega powers here.
I'm afraid of the dilution at the end because
come on. If we put Hogan Piper on with their crap, with Piper shitting his pants during that feud, probably literally his fake hip.
Yeah, I know.
We're putting that on. You can't. Come on, Hogan Savage.
Fine.
The whole.
You're right. You're right. I for argument's sake, I always like to play it out.
Fine, but based on watching the main event 2 alone, that feud should go on there.
You're right.
That whole, Randy,
even,
that whole
even
thing.
Even though that Buster Douglas stuff and all that crap.
I know, but that's a one-off just because they needed to blow it off and move on. I'm going Hogan Savage. Are you with me?
I'm with you.
For number 4, yep. Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage. All right, for our friend Donnie, let's recap here. We have Hogan Orndorff.
Right.
Hogan Andre.
Yep.
Hogan Piper.
Yep.
And Hogan Savage for a Mount Rushmore. I think that's a very respectable list.
Indeed.
We want to know yours, folks, so you can tweet at us at OVP Podcast. You can email us or simply let us know on the Facebook group. All right, Quinn, well, I started the best. You get to start the worst.
Well.
Oh, no.
We got plenty here.
Okay.
I think I'm going to start with the most obvious one.
What is that, Quinn?
The Dungeon of Doom.
Yeah, the whole thing, right?
The whole thing.
Now, there is a notable bad component of that. I mean, it's all bad. Don't get me wrong. From Kevin Sullivan to... Wasn't Kamala in the Dungeon of Doom?
Yeah,
yes,
the Zodiac.
All that shit. But the Giant, Quinn.
I always like to segment the Giant off.
Okay.
And maybe it can occupy two spots, but I'm not sure.
I don't think
so.
Let's
talk about it.
Andre's son.
So they bring him in, right? Yes. Andre's son. There's that part of it. They kind of like acted like Kevin Sullivan was behind it, but I never felt like the Giant was really part of the Dungeon of Doom necessarily.
He was, though. Remember, but he was hanging out with Zodiac
for
all the time?
Like a minute, and then he's like, after they have the monster truck fight or whatever, like, he's just the Giant. Like,
but the worst part of it is the monster truck fight, and that's when he's in the Dungeon of Doom.
Yeah, but then he's like in the NWO, and then he's not.
Why were they in monster truck?
Yeah.
What was that? I just need to know who did that.
Okay, so basically what it was they had like some sponsorship with the monster truck, so they had to involve them in this pay-per-view. So when the Giant Hogan were feuding at the time, and basically like the Giant was driving around in his monster truck, as we saw it in that Nitro where you reviewed.
Yes.
And like Hogan's like, my monster truck's gonna get you, and then they basically like had a monster truck sumo fight on a roof,
and then he threw him off the roof,
but then they fought later in the night.
And Giant won.
Well, because Giant's so big, he survived.
Get him off of there.
No,
oh my god,
no.
Oh no. Help!
No!
Help. Now, also, at the very end of that, it introduced another component to that feud.
Yeah.
The Yeti.
Oh, God, no!
Remember, that's how that ended, is the Yeti and the Giant did a double hug on Hogan.
Yes, the double hug. That whole thing was bizarre.
Yeah.
The whole feud, Hogan's horrible acting. I remember there's one thing where he's like, where am I? There's no Hulkamaniacs here.
Yeah, he's all concerned. It's foggy. Like,
it's foggy.
Yeah.
Can we just put it in, please?
Okay, so we counting the Giant or
the
Dungeon of Doom?
Including the Giant, though, okay?
Now, the Master was all behind this, too.
Shut up.
So is he feuding with the Master?
He's feuding with the fans at that point because they were sick of him and sick of this feud.
Oh, and we forgot one other aspect of it.
Go ahead.
Dark Hogan, when they shaved his mustache off,
God.
Kevin Sullivan dressed up like a lady and ambushed him.
Yeah, and as we reviewed on that Nitro a couple weeks ago, Hogan was an asshole the whole feud, too.
Yeah.
So, like, why would I like him?
And sorry, I said one more thing, but there's also one other very big notable thing about all this.
Fine, go ahead.
The three-level caged thing.
Yes, that's the cap-off there. That's the blow-off.
So basically, they got anybody who ever hated Hogan, including like the Four Horsemen, like Arn Anderson
for some
sweatpants.
Reason. Lex Luger for no reason.
Yeah, because he was like kind of friends with Jimmy Hart or something. And like
that's true, yes.
Yeah, some shit like that. So yeah, that whole garbage sucked. Get it in. Just put it in Death Valley.
Here it goes.
Die, die, die.
All right, so now that that's out of the way, the Dungeon of Doom, I have one for you, Michael.
Sure.
Remember when Hogan fought Jay Leno?
Yeah.
What the hell was that feud about?
It's not very long, first of all. It's like a month.
Still.
Jay Leno wins it! Jay Leno wins it!
Why was he feuding with Jay Leno?
Because, remember,
yeah, I mean, they beat the Hulk thing here, and I mean, same business, dude.
Well, they wanted Jay Leno.
Why?
Because wasn't Dennis Rodman involved in that, too? Who was on Hogan's side in that tag thing?
Bischoff.
Bischoff. Okay,
Jay Leno.
In the judo outfit.
And DDP. But, Quinn, I just need to say this. Jay Leno! Come on!
Didn't he, like, put Hogan in like an arm lock or something?
Yeah, he did. Like an arm ringer, I think. And he's like, I can wrestle now.
I mean,
okay, it wasn't that long.
Unlike the Dungeon of Doom, we had so many things.
True.
We could, like, so many things.
And this wasn't that long.
Yeah, Jay Leno, literally, it's like a month, and there's that weird, like, vignette where Bischoff has, like, Miss Elizabeth on, like, the...
Yeah, on the Tonight Show.
On the fake, like, Tonight Show.
Yeah.
And, like, Hogan's yelling about how he's good or something.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
All right, I got one for you then.
Sure.
It's WCW. Mm-hmm. It's Hogan Vader.
That one is bad, and it's not because I want it to be. It's because...
It just is.
Because I love Vader.
Me too.
But it just makes Vader look dumb.
Yeah, because they took, like, the old WWF format of, like, big... They treated Vader like he was King Kong Bundy, and maybe you'll want to bring him up later, but they treated Vader like he was a King Kong Bundy or something.
Yeah.
Where the fans were clamoring to see him vanquish Vader. The thing is Vader had maybe half the crowd on his side.
Yeah, people loved
him. He was Vader!
Yeah, dude! No, Vader was coming off, like, his feud with, like, the Boss and shit like that, where people were, like, they just wanted to see these two fat guys beat each other up.
This
and it was awesome.
World champion like a year or two prior.
Yes.
Vader.
It's Vader.
The Vader. Like the good Vader.
Yes.
And then Hogan's like, oh, no, no, no. Wag my finger at you.
It's like, I'm so good. basically.
Bullshit. I hated that
feud. It's fucking bullshit. Put it, just, no.
Okay, I'm fine.
I hate that.
I do too,
like,
because
I hate it.
They treated Vader like he was a jobber of the month.
Yeah.
You know, like the big fat job, like one-man gang. Whoever you want to pick, you know what I mean?
He was basically treated like he was the Yeti or something.
Yeah.
Like, essentially.
Bullshit feud.
Yeah, bullshit.
Bullshit feud. Ego stroke for Hogan.
Yeah.
And it's in 95, too, when it didn't need to be an ego stroke for Hogan.
Yeah.
So, die.
Bullshit. Yeah, die.
Die.
Hogan Vader for number two. You got one, Michael?
What about Hogan versus Kidman? This is an interesting one.
From 2000.
Yes.
Yeah, that one's a weird feud. I know that Kidman got a win over Hogan, one win over Hogan.
Right.
Why, though? Why were they feuding? Was that Russo?
That was the feud between
Russo.
The New Blood.
So that was Russo.
And Hogan was sporting, like, some weird logo, like the F.
Yeah, F-U-N-B.
F-U-N-B.
He was, like, not NWO Hogan, but he was, like, Street Hogan or something.
Yeah, it was really strange.
He wasn't Dark Hogan. He wasn't NWO Hogan.
He wasn't Dark Swords.
No.
Zorro Hogan.
Zorro Hogan?
Yeah.
He was he was Street Thug. He was a Final Fight Hogan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Streets of Rage.
Mad Gear Hogan.
Yeah. Yeah, some crap like that.
That was a weird feud, though.
I don't know if it's necessarily, like, the worst, only because, like, I appreciate that he put Kidman over and didn't, like, ask for his win back.
Are you sure he didn't get it back, though, Quinn? He might have. I don't remember.
I don't think so.
I think he probably... It's Hogan.
Are you sure?
Maybe he was gone. Maybe Russo called him bald at the Bash at the Beach before Kidman could job to him again.
I don't know.
You know what I mean? Maybe that's what happened.
What about... Okay, wait.
Okay, go ahead.
On that same tangent, what about that Hogan versus Jared feud they had for a second? Like, Jeff Jarrett's as good as Hulk Hogan or something?
Yeah, the only thing there that I can kind of understand is at some point... Jarrett is... I don't like Jeff Jarrett.
I don't think
he's on a higher level than Billy Kidman, star-wise.
I don't think he should ever... No, he isn't.
Yes, he is.
He is and
Quinn,
he isn't.
Quinn, he is.
J-E-F-F-J-A-R-R-E-T.
Yes.
That guy
yes.
is on the same level.
A higher level than Billy Kidman as a superstar.
Of.
Yes, he is, especially in 2000. How about this one? I don't know what your thoughts are on this one. I didn't like it, though, because of the way they did it. It's another similar to Vader one. Hogan Sid from 92.
Eh. It was like...
It was shitty.
Was anything happening in that feud, though? It was, like, just quickly set up for, like, WrestleMania.
Sid was a legit threat, though.
He was.
I guess they treated him like one. You know what? They did treat him like one.
Yeah, they had that whole build-up as he was the ref at
You're
Summer
right,
Slam
you're right, okay.
That. It's just somewhere in the middle. I don't think it's, like, the worst thing ever. I do think this one is.
Okay, go ahead.
I hate the Earthquake feud.
Really?
Because he doesn't make Earthquake look good.
No, and when we were talking to Scott last Thursday, he mentioned that feud drew a lot of money, but money and quality don't necessarily go hand in hand.
I mean, it kind of did, but I don't remember it on TV being, like, presented very well, other than these really bizarre, like, get well Hogan
Well, that
things.
Was horrible.
Yeah.
But actually, Quinn, I beg to differ. He did kind of make Earthquake look good. He never lost to him by pinfall on TV.
Yeah, but did that feud ever even get resolved? Because that's what Scott was saying. Like,
according to Scott, it was on the host show circuit that it did get resolved. So I don't know if I could put that on. That's not that bad. It's not great. Don't get me wrong. It's not like an all-time classic.
Okay, well, in the same vein as that, how about King Kong Bundy?
Yeah, I mean, that to me, again, you weren't born at the time. I was months old when that feud happened, so we couldn't have known the pulse at the time.
Yeah.
But even looking back as a young fan when I first got into wrestling, I didn't buy Bundy as a threat to Hogan.
No way.
The broken ribs notwithstanding, you know?
But we also did not see the television where he would, like, beat jobbers up with the five count and everything.
True.
So I could see why it might have been impressive, but it turned out stupid.
Yeah.
Like, it was just an excuse for Hogan to rip his shirt off on the top of a cage. Like, and just... You know, vanquish another fat heel at WrestleMania.
Yeah. You know what? I have one for you, Quinn, but it's controversial.
Sure.
Hogan Sting. I actually think it's one of the worst. I didn't say that too much earlier, but I really didn't think it was that good.
This is where I disagree a little bit.
And that's fair. You're allowed.
And this is why. Basically, the build to it was so strong.
Yeah.
And Sting did win. He did.
Shittily.
He shittily won, but he won.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I'm like, I'm on the fence about it. I'm just like, but it wasn't what we hoped for. But at the same time, it's like people were so excited about that. And, like, the crowd does pop regardless of like how it happens. They're,
well, of course they did.
They're really excited.
But like, one pop does not a good feud make, Michael.
I wouldn't say it helps Sting in the long run.
It didn't.
But it will say Hogan. The feud as a whole,
uh-huh.
It has like a beginning and an end, and it just, it is what it is. Like,
okay.
It's not the worst ever.
Can I tell you one that was really bad?
Sure.
Hogan McMahon.
Yes.
And they put it on WrestleMania 19.
That was shit.
No one really wanted to see Hogan fight McMahon. Like, was that like a dream match that I'm not aware of?
It was only a dream match because the opportunity existed. And let me explain that
okay.
a little bit.
It's yeah,
like,
go ahead.
Basically, like, we knew that there was some kind of bad blood between Vince and Hogan, like,
In the past. Not then.
And now that Vince was an on-screen character that wrestled, they
right.
just, like, took that as, like, an excuse, and they were like, oh, finally, we can make them fight when Hogan comes back.
Okay.
And it's terrible, not only just because, like, why would Vince McMahon beat Hulk Hogan? It's stupid.
Right, and why would they fight at WrestleMania, really?
But it leads to, like, this whole thing where he can't wrestle in the WWF, so he comes back as Mr.
Yes.
America.
Oh, God.
And it's basically, like, Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan's stupid joke from, like, the Machines back in 86. like amplified for, like, the Attitude Ruthless Aggression era.
It is funny, though, when Hogan's like,
I am not Hulk Hogan, brother.
Yeah.
That is a funny little wink at the crowd there. But really, why did they do that feud?
It's really stupid.
You know what's even worse, maybe, is we talked about it, so I don't want to rehash too much, but Hogan Michaels, it was a
yes,
bad feud.
That's really bad.
That might go on.
Yeah. I actually think both of those could.
Really? As the two worst Hogan feuds?
We have two more,
right? We have two
right?
open, yeah. Hogan, all right, well, let's just pick one first. Which is worse, Hogan Michaels, because they made Michaels turn heel.
Yeah.
And they did the Larry King skit, which we mentioned, and it was just a stupid summer
Everything
feud.
About it was dumb. I think that's worse.
Put it in?
Yes.
All right, Hogan Michaels.
Die.
So we got Hogan McMahon as a contender. Are there any others that we're missing here? I mean, Hogan had a lot of feuds, for crying out loud. He did.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were one-off matches, you know, with fat guys, so it's hard to make them the worst, necessarily.
You know what's one dumb one?
Yeah.
Is when Brutus the Barber, like, he's not in the Dungeon of Doom
no.
yet.
No, like, oh, the one... Three Faces of Fear.
Yeah.
And he was with Kevin Sullivan, and he was the Butcher.
Yes.
And they headlined Starrcade 94.
Yeah, that's poop.
That smells and reeks of cronyism.
Oh, it's the most cronyism of cronyism.
That's the worst. That can go on, Quinn,
that
I think, because...
That sucks. Like,
Brutus Beefcake...
At the biggest pay-per-view WCW has...
Had no business
yes.
being a main eventer.
Yeah.
Ever. Maybe in 90 before he broke his face. That might have been about it.
Yeah.
That was the best he ever was, I think, was like 1990.
Yeah. Wait, also, there's also one more
no.
in that vein.
Okay.
Hogan and Beefcake versus Money Inc.
I hate that feud because I hate 93 Hogan.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah.
And I hate that he always called him the multi-million-dollar man.
But multi-million-dollar man.
Man. But that wasn't a feud. It was like really brief. Hogan Butcher.
Yeah.
Because
Hogan Butcher is terrible.
Because he was the masked man, remember? That attacked Hogan with the pipe.
And he had like dumb sunglasses on to make him look eviler
yeah,
or something.
But it was just fucking Ed Leslie.
Yeah.
Why is he a main eventer?
Past his prime.
That says something too, because he was younger than Hogan, but Hogan was still like somehow in it, like his an acceptable prime.
Hogan somehow looked acceptable. Brutus Beefcake is stupid at that
like,
point.
No offense, Ed Leslie.
Yeah,
but
I have no problem with Ed Leslie
as
the
a human.
Person.
No, but
I just that is just dumb.
But that reeked of Hogan being like, "Yeah, let me get him a big payday." You know, let me get him a big feud.
That would
Why?
Be like if they did like Hogan Honky Tonk Man in like '96 or something.
Hogan Knobs.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll
F that.
I'll put it in with you. That'll be number four.
Die.
Well, that is our Mount Rushmore and Death Valley of Hulk Hogan feuds. I'm not recapping. The worst, Donnie, all right? Figure it out for yourself. But folks, we want to know yours, obviously. Let us know if we missed anything. I'm sure we did. I'm sure we overlooked something. Or maybe you'll disagree with us, Marty Howell. So you can let us know by tweeting at us at OVP Podcast. You can email us or just let us know on Facebook. Quinn, when we come back, we've received a tape in the mail.
Oh.
So we will be reviewing something right after this.
Oh. Where am I? There's no Hulkamaniacs here. I've never been here before. Ah! It's not hot. Where is this place? I know you. I know you too. You two are behind the demise of Hulkamania. I know about the Zodiac. I know about the dangerous Kamala. And oh yeah, I know about the Maneater.
Hey, it's Sean Mooney. I may no longer be in the event center, but if I was, I'd be talking about our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast. All right, boys, let's get to it.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Quinn, as I mentioned before the break, we got a tape in the mail, and we obviously have to review that if we get a tape in the mail.
It was a mystery tape.
To our P.O. box.
I had to inspect it first.
Had to make sure, you know?
Yeah, you don't want it to be anything smelly or something like that.
So we pop it into the VCR, and what did it wind up being? WWF Sunday Night Slam from March 26, 1995. So 95, can't escape that stench.
Yeah.
But what the hell was Sunday Night Slam, folks? You might be wondering if you're not up to speed on that. Well, back in the late 80s and early 90s, Quinn, if you recall, they used to have these specials on the USA Network before some of the big pay-per-views. There was the SummerSlam Spectacular about a week before SummerSlam, the Survivor Series Showdown, and the March to WrestleMania. They had a bunch of these.
Right. Now, if the only one that I ever recall being important was the one where the Million Dollar Man won the title back from Virgil because, like, Repo came out or whatever.
Survivor Series Showdown.
That was, like, the only time any of these things mattered.
I think you're right, although the SummerSlam Spectacular of 92 had that Savage and Warrior against the Nasty Boys match where they where Savage and Warrior fought. Remember, they got all mad at each other?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, that to me, that's not as important as the $1 million title changing hands.
Very prestigious.
Well, it was only the second time ever, so that's kind of important.
So WWF by 94, they did the March to WrestleMania for 94. It sucked. I've seen it. Then they had these things, three of them, called Sunday Night Slam, and it would be the week before a pay-per-view, and they had one the week before SummerSlam, or a week or so before SummerSlam 94. It was really bad. It had Diesel versus Typhoon, Quinn.
Wonderful.
They had a Sunday Night Slam in November of 94, and they had a Sunday Night Slam right before WrestleMania 11.
Yes.
And that's what we have the pleasure of reviewing today, thanks to our mystery friend.
Yeah.
Our tape trader.
Just says question mark on the on the package. From question mark.
And this is also from a question mark. We don't know where this is from, so I had to look it up. It's actually from some fucking civic center in California, this show. It looks like crap, as you might imagine, for 95.
I mean, it's the typical, tiny arena. You could tell they do the thing where they try to make it look bigger, but when you can see posts and the ceiling, it's not big.
Exactly. Now we get a cold open here, and it's got Vince McMahon narrating a surprisingly very good promo. Okay. The promo is great. It's for a steel cage match.
Okay.
Yes.
That seems intriguing, but for what?
And this is the last time, Quinn, we're talking about this.
Well, it's okay. It's apropos that it's the last time because it's got to be the end of this forever.
It is Lex Luger versus Tatanka in their never-ending feud.
This thing that has not escaped us since, I believe, episode one with heel Tatanka being the first topic or something we ever did.
It was,
we have
right.
never been able to escape this feud. So whoever sent this must have known that we needed to put a nail in the coffin here on this garbage dump of a feud.
This garbage dump of a feud is right. So the promo's good though, and they hype it up like it's the most serious, important feud in the world, Quinn.
Notice they don't show the Chief J Strongbow incident or any of the other nonsense that, thanks to these reviews, we've had to deal with.
Yes.
With this crap.
That's true. And you had a good question for me. You said, why didn't they just do this at WrestleMania?
Okay. So later on in the show, not to spoiler, but it's because everyone knows the WrestleManias, the Allied Powers are going to face Jacob and Eli Blue with Dutch Mantel there, Uncle Zeb, whatever you want to call him.
Yes.
That match is why yeah. is that there. It's just like fluff filler.
It is.
But they have this feud that they've been building since like SummerSlam or yes. some shit. And they're like, ah, just put it on Sunday Night Slam.
yeah, no
like,
one, which probably no one watched, yeah, by the way.
Exactly.
Honestly. And also, Tatanka had a very interesting line, which I know, Quinn, you're going to speak more on later during the match. But Tatanka had a very interesting line right. about Luger just like ravaging his people years ago, you know?
When you and all those immigrants put my people and he caged them on territory, on one piece of land.
It all made sense to me at this point, and I started to just feel for Tatanka, and we'll get into it when we go to the match, but
It was a very notable line there. Also, Luger's mullet here is out of control.
yeah, it's
really
like
MacGyver.
Bad. Yep.
So we get a strange opening, and it's like the modified WrestleMania
yeah, it's
theme.
It's really weird. I don't...
Do, 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 do.
What are you, Vanilla Ice?
And we're hosted by this odd team of Vince McMahon
yes.
and Jim Ross.
What? It's like two
Bud Abbotts,
analysts.
You know what I mean? Yeah, no, two color guys.
Yeah,
or two play-by-play guys.
Yeah.
Very weird. And we get an even stranger opening match. It's Intercontinental Champion Jeff Jarrett with the Roadie versus Bob Backlund?
Heel versus heel. And, okay, they explain like
yes.
what happened here.
Yes.
They basically say that Backlund, like, somehow, like, beat up Barry Horowitz, who was about to sign a contract. First of all, Barry Horowitz was supposed to be getting an Intercontinental title shot on, like, Sunday Slam or whatever.
He hadn't even beaten Skip yet.
Yeah.
He hadn't even done that yet.
Not at all. And what's weird about this is I feel like it would be more intriguing to watch like Barry Horowitz get a title shot
I know,
on this than
it would have been.
Backlund in a heel versus heel match.
And what's weird is Backlund gets the jobber entrance. He's already in the ring.
Well, that's because Backlund doesn't have music, first of all. And
true.
Second
would
of all,
killed, yeah.
it's only like an hour long, so they can't, like, they don't have time for him to, like, jump all around and whatever with his hiney and all that
from
shit.
From Princeton, Minnesota.
Yeah. Like, I'm here! Like,
ugly Irish whip sequence to start. Just sloppy. And then Backlund does this whole, like, whoa, offense, you know, like the body slam, the double underhook suplex,
right.
the atomic drop, and then the Roadie gets bumped in the middle of all that, which was kind of funny.
Now,
then, yeah,
now,
go ahead.
Now, Backlund's the face kind of
I mean,
of
not
here.
Really, but just goes to show that given a choice, folks, between crazy old-ass Bob Backlund
right.
and Jeff Jarrett,
mm-hmm.
people like Bob Backlund more.
Yeah, weird.
And I agree.
Yeah, I mean, no one likes Jeff Jarrett.
He broke 6,000 guitars, never drew a dime.
You know, he hit 1,000 guitars, never drew a dime.
That whole thing.
Yeah.
So Jarrett takes over with a hip toss into his short arm scissors for like 3 minutes. Jarrett's just laying on the guy's arm.
Again, broke 1,000 guitars, never drew a dime.
But then this was interesting, Quinn, and Backlund gets a big face reaction because he powers out of it.
Yeah.
He stands up like that old Bulldog. Bulldog used to do that spot too.
Right.
Like the power up, and he puts him on the top rope, but then the Roadie like slyly interferes.
Right, right.
So ref doesn't see it.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. By the way, speaking of the ref, it's Earl Hebner. He's back in the stripes. They've recently reinstated the black and white
yes.
stripes after all these years.
Now, he has the short sleeve stripes, and we'll go into this later, but there's
yes.
there's other modifications
yes.
of this uniform.
There are. So they did the blue shirts for all these years, but they're back in stripes now, just in time for WrestleMania.
No more bow ties.
No more bow tie. We're back to being Foot Locker employees.
yeah.
We come back from commercial, and Jarrett gets Backlund in an abdominal stretch. Now, by the way, this match is not even as good as I'm making it sound, just for the record here. And yeah, Backlund is clearly getting the face reaction. So we get a big pile driver by Backlund, and he starts looking at his hands. Backlund's like, oh no, my hands are telling me it's time to do the crossface chicken wing, and he's about to. But then Razor Ramon runs in to make the save because, obviously, Quinn,
yes.
Razor wants Jarrett to keep the Intercontinental title so he can win it from him at WrestleMania.
Right.
Which he didn't.
Yes. So this is weird. They did all this like stuff here, and like WrestleMania 11 really didn't lead to much, did it?
It didn't.
Yeah.
It honestly was a very disappointing show. So then Backlund, Quinn, puts Razor Ramon in the chicken wing, and then all three guys are beating Razor down until
yeah.
Bret Hart makes the save.
Yeah, I don't get this because Backlund's just kind of been robbed of like a title match.
Yeah.
Why is he helping them?
I don't know.
Like, does he want to win the belt?
I don't know. Like, I know. He's crazy. so it doesn't matter.
That's bullshit that they can just write that shit off. That's crap.
Quinn, you had a very funny comment to me about when Brett made the save. You were saying how, like, he runs in and immediately starts doing five moves of doom.
He seriously just tries to, like, set him up for the five moves of doom. Like, that's not what you do on running. You just, like, punch him or something.
I swear, I saw an inverted atomic drop there.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Did happen.
He was going for it. And then the kid makes the save, too.
Shouldn't he have come out first? Isn't he, like, Razor Ramon's best friend?
Yeah.
You know, after he, like, stole things from him.
Yeah, let's not get into that. That was treacherous, obviously. Then they play Brett's music after the save.
Great.
Oh, okay. He wasn't the one that was, like, in the match or anything.
No.
Or, you know, no one there was in this match.
Yeah.
Well, let's just play Brett's music. Why not? You know? So, two notes on this further. The crowd was very hard to see. And what I mean by that is the arena lights are so dim because clearly there's
no one there.
3,000 people, maybe. I mean, honestly, there's probably many people there.
What's crazy about that is, like, we're, like, in Mania season.
I know.
Like, nowadays, that would be, like, unthinkable.
But we're in 1995.
Right.
So,
I mean, this is the same year I saw an event at a high school gym. So.
Right, which was probably bigger than this place, in all honesty. And then the other weird note about this is for JR and Vince being on commentary, normally when JR was on with Vince in any capacity, like with King or whatever, JR was kind of like a color guy with King.
Right.
Vince is the color guy here.
Yeah,
JR's on play-by-play.
Really strange.
Vince on color? Like, I never remember that happening.
Me either.
This is the only time I can think of where
very strange.
Vince is there and not doing play-by-play. He's just there, like, saying other stuff.
Yeah, I don't understand why they did this, and there's, like, more to say about this later.
Yeah, right.
But,
we'll have more on that. Don't worry, folks. So anyway, promotional consideration, yes, they were still using that in 95.
With Lord Alfred.
Is paid for by Stephanie Wyand reminding us that WrestleMania is a week away.
And I said this to you. I said, did you ever think you would hear those two, like, voices, like, side by side?
Right, Lord Alfred and then Stephanie Wyand?
Yeah, everyone's favorite mom.
We go back to the ring, and we've got Quinn, Head Shrinker Sione.
Could they have just called him the Barbarian at this point? Like, who gives a shit about the Head Shrinkers? And Barbarian's awesome.
And,
like,
he's by himself.
Yeah, so what is the point of the Sione crap? Like, he's got, like, this, like, skull and crossbones thing on his head.
Headdress,
but what's funny, and he's got, like, the skirt or whatever.
Yeah, the Head Shrinker
skirt.
He rips
it all off, and he just looks like regular Barbarian.
He's just Barbarian.
Yeah, it's stupid.
And he is fighting our WrestleMania 11 main eventer, Bam Bam Bigelow!
Yeah, Bam Bam Bigelow here.
So he makes his way out, and then we clip right to commercial. When we come back, they're in the middle of Sione failing to body slam Bam Bam. You know, their clotheslines, all that crap. Now, Quinn, I need to mention here, Danny Davis and his Shemp haircut is the referee here. And you had a very big problem with his attire in general.
Okay, so here's Danny Davis.
Never mind that he looks like Shemp.
Shemp Davis here. And he's got long sleeve, like, baggy Foot Locker ref shirt on.
Like, looks like he borrowed
it. First of all, like, nobody is wearing this other than him.
Yeah.
Yet it has, like, the WWF, like, epaulette or whatever you would call that crap on the corner.
Did he just, like, request a long sleeve shirt?
Was he, like, sewing it in the background, like, on just, like, a Foot Locker shirt, like his day job or something? Because there's no way in hell the refs were getting paid enough in 1995.
In fact, I don't remember him ever wearing short sleeves, Quinn.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Maybe he had, like, sailor tattoos or something, like Tony Garea or some shit. But anyway, he looks like he should be, like, an MMA ref, and I'm like, why doesn't he have those, like, black, like rubber gloves on in case they start bleeding?
Right.
Especially with these two, they're, like, head butt masters.
Yes, they are. Yeah. Butt heads, one
of
them.
I don't know. It just, he really bothered me because he was completely different from all the refs.
No, he was. And actually, as Bam Bam stomps and stomps Barbarian a real lot, you then started to pontificate, Quinn, about the referee, like, winter attire, because you got so caught up on the long sleeves.
I did. I was like, is there separate ref, like, winter gear? And it's funny, you don't pay attention to it a lot, but, like, even now, like, I'm not sure, just thinking about it, is, like, in the winter, do the refs have long sleeves? I forget.
Well, folks, if you have any insight onto the referee attire, please let us know. We'd be happy to hear about that. In the meantime, we get a big power slam by Barbarian.
Right.
And Quinn, you are singing his praises.
Yeah,
this whole
he's
match.
Great here. He's great. He really is.
He's, like, still good.
Yeah, he's still good. There's no reason he should be, like, in a tag team wrestling by himself named Sione.
Named Sione, yeah. And then he goes up top and he misses a flying headbutt, obviously, because he's fighting the master of the flying headbutt.
Yeah.
And then Bigelow gets an enziguri, and then, surprisingly, a flying crossbody block for the win.
Yeah, that was weird.
Speaking of Tony Garea.
Yeah.
Now, the sad-ass million-dollar corporation trots down to ringside, and meanwhile, Quinn calls Kama Kamala, because who gives a shit?
Yeah, he might as well have been. Like, do you think, like, if Kamala was in the million-dollar corporation, like, retroactively, would you, like, remember it any different?
No.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be the same thing.
It could have happened.
It could have happened, like, and I wouldn't have known,
yeah,
you know?
It's just, like, his face paint's green or something. Like, yeah.
What a sad fucking collection, though. What a sorry excuse for a stable this was.
Yeah, it's so bad.
They were awful.
And I remember, like, after, like, Bam Bam lost at WrestleMania, like, famously, that, like, they dumped Bam Bam. But if you look at this, right, they only come out, like, after he wrestles. It's like they're, like, half involved in this. So who gives a shit, in their case, if Bam Bam wins or loses? Why do they care so much?
Why do they care? And then they replace him with Sid. Great move. The worst version of Sid.
What an acquisition.
Yeah, really. So then Bam Bam says, he gets on the mic, he says he's going to set LT on fire. Who is he, Kane?
Well, he has the flame head, so.
So is that how he does it? He just touches them with his head?
It's very hot. It's a hot head. He's a hot head.
Good one, Quinn. Tomorrow on Raw, a good match. Brett and Owen are going no holds barred.
That's weird, right? Again, it's almost WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Brett's facing Backlund.
Backlund.
Like, huh?
What?
Why didn't you just do that Owen match again? You got nothing else better planned for this. Just do the SummerSlam 95 way of doing it.
I'll fight my brother Owen. Yeah. So we go back to the ring and Vince in his Raw turtleneck. Yeah, I never heard of that one before. Seriously.
Okay, Raw turtleneck. He's supposed to be on Sunday Night Slam. This is where, like, hints start to come out that, like, this was just some Raw shit that they filmed and, like, we're going to just use it for later.
And packaged later. Yeah. Like, they probably didn't even know what was going on when they filmed it, you know? And then they're like, all right, we'll put Bigelow Sione on Sunday Night Slam.
Great.
So anyway, he brings out Diesel.
Yeah. Dan Connor making his entrance here.
With his Roseanne music. This is a precursor to the Attitude Era. JR does a promo for Skittles.
Yeah, I was surprised King wasn't with him during that. It was weird.
Skittles, JR? Yeah. Roman Reigns Sr. gets in the ring and Vince rambles on and on. And you said to me, look at him. He's so proud.
He is. He's like looking at him. Like, he's like, oh.
This is my champion.
He's my baby. Like,
more than any other WrestleMania in history, the eyes of the entertainment world, the eyes of the sporting world will focus on April the 2nd.
This is the best part, though. Within all the rambling, Vince doesn't even ask a question. So he just gives the mic to Diesel.
With nothing.
So Diesel just says WrestleMania a bunch of times. He's like, it's WrestleMania. It's my first WrestleMania. It won't be my last WrestleMania. I'm defending the title at WrestleMania.
WrestleMania. WrestleMania 11. My first WrestleMania and my first title defense at a WrestleMania.
Vince is doing, like, almost all the talking here. He's carrying this whole thing, and not well, I might add.
Mm-hmm.
And then Diesel says Sean is the best athlete ever or something, but he's not going to win.
Yeah.
And then Vince brings up Sid. Diesel's like, yeah, Sid's really big.
Yeah. It's nice that we're talking about Sid before this match instead of his opponent.
I know. It's true. Also, it's funny. Nash is calling Sid big.
Yeah, I don't get that. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
It'd be like me calling you big. Like, we're, like, the same size.
Yeah. And why is, like, Diesel acting like he, like, beat anybody, like, reputable for the title? We just saw Mr. Bob Backlund, the guy he beat for the belt.
And he only had that match because Bret Hart, like, wanted to go film Lonesome Dove or something.
Probably.
You know, I wanted to be an actor, so I figure I like John Wayne and cowboys a real lot, so I figured I would do this show called Lonesome Dove.
Yeah, that went
great. You ever see any of his appearances on that? He's not that good.
Brett, the only other appearances he ever made, from my knowledge, were, like, on The Simpsons.
And Mad TV.
Yeah.
He was on that a couple times with Will Sasso.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, but these weren't, like, big things. Like,
no, they
Brett
weren't.
Did not have a good acting career ahead of him.
No, God, no. He wasn't a good actor. Good promo in his later career.
Sort of.
I don't know, 96
onward. Yeah, later, but...
But actor? The actor?
Yeah.
come on now.
Weird. What is that weird clip you once sent me where he's like has a gun or something?
I don't know. I forget what that is, but there is something with Bret Hart with a gun. I don't remember.
In like a movie.
I don't know. Yeah, why is
I think
he
it's
in
when,
movie? At,
when he looked like a Navajo Indian woman later on.
Don't make fun of him. So Sean struts out and he doesn't lose a smile on the way to the ring, but he's got a beard.
Which he did lose later.
And Sid, who he also lost later.
Yeah.
And then Sean yells about how he, this is funny, Quinn, because you said this.
Yeah.
About Diesel not beating anybody reputable. Sean yells about how he earned this title
he
shot.
He did. He won the Royal Rumble at number one.
Right. Like, nobody brought him in. You know, right. Nobody gave him title shots.
That's
he
true.
Earned it. And he says the new generation is going to start, but it's not going to start with Diesel. It's going to start with HBK.
Well, I wish it wouldn't start at all, to be honest. Let's skip right to the Attitude Era.
Then Sid starts yelling, and in the middle of that,
yes,
this was bizarre. We have technical difficulties. This is what happened from our vantage point.
Yeah.
As Sid starts yelling, the tape rewinds backwards.
Right.
Now,
at first you thought it was like somebody
we
taped
thought it was
wrong.
Like whoever taped this fucked up when they were dubbing it or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And that would have been what I still thought, if not for the fact that the screen then goes black.
Yeah.
And then, like, a Sunday Night Slam static logo just appears on the screen.
Yeah, like your typical, like, technical difficulty. It's just, like, the show card.
Yes!
Title card.
Like, the title card is just on the screen, and at no point did that ever happen.
Right.
When we were watching it, and then we go back to Sean coming back out.
Right. Just,
so, like,
it replays.
Either, and the USA Network logo was in the corner of
the whole
screen.
Time. Yeah.
So we know it was taped off USA and not like Sky Sports or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And to the best of my knowledge, this never re-aired.
Yeah.
So what do you mean to tell me that they fucked up when they were playing the master tape?
Well, this is my favorite part, is that it exposes this charade that they've been trying to like front the whole show that this is live or something.
Sure.
It's like it literally like the tape rewinds like on the air.
It's amazing. I can't even explain it. I can't cut it in because there's no like you don't hear like beep, 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 beep.
Yeah,
like it's just silent rewinding.
Yeah.
But I promise you it's real, folks. It rewinded it, then you get a please stand by card, basically.
Yeah.
It's very, very strange. Then we have Sid yelling again. He said he's gonna break Diesel's stinking back. Okay.
Okay.
Sean says it's gonna be a once in a lifetime performance. So we're already talking about performances versus fighting.
This is weird.
And then he says he's gonna go over at WrestleMania.
Yeah, but then again, Diesel does pick it up because he says, he goes, over my dead body.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but so Vince doesn't like fire both of them, basically. He's like saving his ass.
Look at these insider terms here. Performance. You know, he's not going to wrestle him, Quinn. He's not going to try to beat him. He's not going to try to fight him. He's performing at WrestleMania, and he's going to go over. Come on. 95.
Something about that tells me that there was more to the story there. Like, somebody was mad at somebody.
You think so?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Sean with the beard, and, like, he doesn't look happy during this. Like,
well, he wasn't supposed to. He was a heel.
Right, but this is, like, his big thing, and that's what he says at the end.
Yeah.
Like, this is supposed to be his big WrestleMania match.
He's like, I'm going over.
Yeah.
Maybe he wanted to. I mean, Sean never, right? Sean would never insist winning
a
match.
It's just, it's something about it's fishy, that's all.
It's a little fishy.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's cut to Cowboy Todd Pettengill.
Hey, looks like he belongs in the Smoking Guns here.
God, I swear, he's got like this red weird shirt and then like a brown leather vest over it.
Yeah.
And a giant mullet.
Yeah.
If he had a mustache, he'd be a Smoking Gun.
He would, exactly.
So Todd Gunn here gives us a preview of WrestleMania. We gotta kill time, obviously.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, live, of course, the steel cage is getting assembled.
Now, this is awesome, because you say we have to kill time, but Todd's actually like saying while he's like telling us about the card, he's like, we're here because they're building the cage. Look, look, see? And then they like clip to them like putting it together.
As if this wasn't filmed like 3 weeks before Sunday Night Slam.
After they've exposed it because of the fucking tape debacle before.
So we hype Bam Bam LT, and I have to say here, LT's like on screen graphic, you know, for the the card there, him versus Bam Bam, is literally him in that fucking suit at Royal Rumble right before Bam Bam shoved him. Like, seriously, they couldn't have taken a picture of him?
Nothing.
Just like a fuzzy, like, screen cap
it's
of Royal Rumble.
It's clearly a screen cap that somebody, like, probably because the tech didn't exist back then, actually, like, literally, like, they took, like, a print out of the screen and then, like, somebody cut it with scissors around it, like, very precisely.
When they had computers in 95.
With their money?
Don't look at me like that. Okay.
They were in the poorhouse.
When Reggie White says he's going to do stuff or something at WrestleMania.
And then he has a picture of himself behind him, by the way, if you notice.
I'm prepared to get physical with Bundy, with DiBiase, whoever it is that may interfere. Yes, I am. I'm prepared to get physical.
And then Chris Spielman doesn't like Tatanka and calls him a cigar store Indian.
This is ridiculous. First of all,
more sympathy for Tatanka.
First of all, yes, the Tatanka, like, why should I feel bad for him?
He can, like I said, he can be bought and sold. He's like a cigar store Indian. That's what I think. I mean, you can put him one place, buy him. Hey, let's move over here, Tatanka. And, you know, DiBiase got his claws on him, and that's what happens. Greek.
Second of all, why does this guy know the storylines? Yeah, he's just some, like, random football player. He looks like a basketball player more so. He's got like a backwards hat on and shit.
He's like, DiBiase got his grubby claws into him and Tatanka sold that. Like, why are you recapping the storyline?
He's not even in the match, and I bet you he knows more about the storyline than LT does. Yeah.
So, by the way, Brett, like we mentioned, is fighting Mr. Bob Backlund in "And I Quit Being Awake While Watching This Match."
And then I said to you, like, this is what they elected to do with Bret Hart at WrestleMania.
It's 11. Unbelievable. And that's, that is, you know, that's on the record from Brett. That's his least favorite, like, match ever on pay-per-view.
It's so shitty.
It's really bad.
Like, once that whole business was done, they should have never revisited it.
And not
he
at WrestleMania.
Just fought Owen again.
And then, like, do Backlund in your house and get rid of it.
Yeah.
And remember, Piper's like the ref, and he's so annoying. He keeps sticking the mic. What do you say?
Tucked in hot
what
rod
do you
shirt.
Say? Yeah, with the tucked in hot
and
rod
his jeans.
Undertaker's in a fight, King Kong Bundy, Quinn.
Again.
Yeah, I'd rather he didn't.
Why are you doing this?
I don't want that.
Oh, this card sucks. It sucks. This was the first WrestleMania I saw, too.
Me too.
It blew
like live, yeah.
Ass. It was awful.
What?
The only part about it that I remember being good was, like, the celebrities. Like,
and that's debatable,
yeah, that's
by the
debatable,
way.
But
I think Jenny McCarthy was really good.
Right, yeah.
That's about it.
Pam Anderson was fun, too.
She didn't do anything.
And
she
also NYPD Blue and JTT.
No, fuck JTT and that whole thing.
Yeah.
He beats Backlund in chess.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
For some reason, I feel like they arm wrestled or something.
No,
too,
they didn't arm.
There was like,
no,
there was like
didn't.
Games going on in the back.
No, but it's like Backlund like asked him all these questions. And
did you ever think it was weird that they like brought in the celebrity kid or whatever, and he's like relegated to like they're like entertaining him in the back with like board games and shit?
What else is he gonna do?
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like he's like in the kids' room.
I'm
or
surprised
something.
He wasn't coloring and eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich
exactly.
with the crust cut off.
Yeah.
Anyway, Owen Hart's going to have a mystery partner to fight the Guns. That wound up, of course, being Yokozuna in a highlight of the show, honestly.
Right. Yeah.
Like, really, one of the best
seriously.
Parts of the show.
Just him coming out and them, like, squashing the Smoking
it's
Guns.
So good.
Yeah.
That's a
no
good
one
moment.
Cared about the Guns at that
no.
point.
No. In fact, neither did Men on a Mission, because we show a clip of them turning on them. That's how they turned heel.
Yeah, Oscar all upset about this.
Oscar wanted no part of this.
And I was happy, because no more Oscar. It's one of the other two
yeah.
people and Mom that I like. Mo would be gone shortly.
Mo,
yeah.
So we got two Stooges reference, Mo
yeah.
and Shemp right now. And the Allied Powers will take on the Blue Brothers. Yeah, they blew, that's for sure. Thank you.
Well, they had Uncle Zeb with them. I mean, it wasn't that bad.
And don't forget, Quinn, Salt and Peppa's going to be there. John Turturro, all these guys that
we'll hear more from Salt and Peppa later.
Unfortunately. Now, Todd has just been informed right now.
Yes.
That the cage is now assembled, Quinn.
It's live, Joe.
It's live.
Just like this show.
So Tatanka comes out with DiBiase, and I got to say, even his entrance is boring. But, Quinn, you said this is the best he's ever looked.
Yes, it's true. Like,
why is that?
He's like dark Tatanka, and he's not as fat and shitty here. Like,
yeah, that's true. He's not that
he's
bad.
He's like kind of like he's greased up, and like he looks like a wrestler at least.
Not a good one, but a wrestler. Yeah. And then you theorize, Quinn, that the Million Dollar Corporation might have just been an excuse for them to play DiBiase's music multiple times per show.
Yeah, because it's good.
It is really good. It is.
Yeah.
So, as Luger comes out, Quinn starts going on to me at the time about why this feud is so messed up.
Okay. So I'm starting to, like, get... It's like a revelation came to me about this feud, basically. Like, this whole stupid thing, like, it just came to me, right? How they basically, like, positioned Tatanka like he was being, like, repressed or something. Like, he's a Native American. Mm-hmm. He's, like, legit Native American.
Yeah, he is.
And here comes this asshole who was, like... a narcissist, like a couple months before, and then all of a sudden he body slams a fat guy on a boat and wears like American trunks, and he's like the most American person ever, while like a person who literally is a Native American, like no one cares about him because of this stupid guy, this stupid American asshole.
But I think the whole thing, Quinn, is that Tatanka sold out to Ted DiBiase.
Yes. But how would he have the money to, like, campaign and train to, like, beat this American asshole? You gotta do what you gotta do. Why is it a problem for this Native American to go make a little extra coin on the side?
You know what? That's a fair point.
Like, what is the issue? Like, why is he the asshole? And then, you know how we had to review that crusty show before where, like, Tatanka hit Chief J. Strongbow?
Yes.
Then it all, like, came to me. I'm like, wait a second. Chief J. Strongbow is just like an Italian guy just pretending to be a Native American. Just like Luger is probably like of some other descent saying he's like the most American person ever. Tatanka's the one being fucked over here, not these guys. So this is bullshit. Like, I'm rooting for Tatanka now.
From episode 1 to episode 45, what a change.
Yeah.
It all makes sense now. Quinn has explained the feud,
yeah,
and I'm so glad we got this tape in the mail.
Right. You could watch it over again, and it's like, you know, like when you watch The Sixth Sense again, and then you notice, like, Bruce Willis is, like, a ghost, essentially.
Yes, right,
like,
right.
This is, like, me, like, seeing it all now. Like, I'm like, oh, shit. Like, Tatanka was, they were screwing over Tatanka the whole time.
The whole time.
Yeah.
Timmy White is the ref, by the way. And anyway, Tatanka with chops to start. And by chops, I mean a lot of chops. Like, a real lot of chops.
Yeah, but they're tomahawk chops.
Yeah, but you said, Quinn, this match is shit already.
Well, yeah.
It's not good.
I'm running out of reasons to defend Tatanka quickly. I'm still there for him.
I got you.
I get his plight.
Yeah, I got you. Now, Luger with a loud clothesline. You know, the Luger, oh!
Yeah.
Or two, or three. I think he did three of them.
Yeah.
And then a lot of stomps by Luger. Vince says this is not a pretty match.
Yeah.
That's a true statement, well, Vince. I'll give you that. Whoever said Vince is a liar, not all the time.
Not every time.
Now, that weird-ass horizontal elbow by Luger misses. You know where he, like, is basically like a straight line?
Yeah, yeah.
He's like the HR HTML tag. Just like a horizontal rule, just straight. And it falls, and
yes,
it's just nothing. So they lay around a while. And then Tim White has short sleeves, as
yes,
Quinn
he
points
does
out.
So every ref but... Danny Shemp Davis, you know, had short sleeves. So clearly he was breaking the dress code.
Yeah. Now, Tatanka heads for the door as the crowd chants USA. And Quinn, you had been ranting this whole time. I just want to mention, you were so angry when you finally came to the realization that Chief J. Strongbow was an Italian.
Yes.
That really put you over the
that
top.
That was like
I think
the last straw.
Yeah.
It's just like, why is Tatanka the bad guy? Like, it
which
just
is
doesn't
so
make
funny
any sense.
Tatanka dominates now with some cage tosses, and you said to me, Quinn, it's sad that JR left WCW for this.
I know.
This.
He should have left WCW later and then, like, came.
Yeah.
Because this is a waste of his time.
Imagine him being there for, like, 96, the NWO
yeah
and stuff like
yeah
that, and then leaving for 97.
Right, when, once it got all poopy
yep
over there.
Exactly. So Tatanka heads up the cage, but Luger grabs him by the leg.
Now, I gotta say something here. They yeah keep remarking about, like, Tatanka being, like, a coward or something for leaving the cage. That's the freaking rules.
It is part of
why
the rules.
Why is he a coward? Like, he's trying to win. Like, I don't remember anyone calling Hulk Hogan a coward when he fought Paul Orndorff
right
in that cage match we talked about.
Yep.
But, oh, if he tries to escape the cage like the freaking rules say.
That's true.
Which, by the way, I must also note something odd about the rules here. There's some dumb rule that, like, the ref can't be in the cage. I've never seen this,
this
ever.
This is the only time I've ever
they're
seen
like
it, too.
He can't be in only when there's a pin. So what it turns out being is, like, Tim White has to, like,
run
very
in
quickly, like, run in, and he's, like, panting, like,
yeah,
like,
why couldn't they get a more in-shape ref for this?
Yeah, they have Mike Chioda, and he's, like, super young, and he's, like, moving the ring around at this point, and he's a ref at the same time. They also have Shane McMahon, like,
yeah,
moonlighting as a ref every now and then.
And Jack Cardone was pretty young. They had some young refs.
So they picked Tim White, who's like older.
Yeah.
And no offense to Tim White.
No, I like Timmy
White.
But
like, he's too old for this.
Husky.
Yeah.
He looks like
Norm. Could have just been anybody else. Like, it's not a big deal.
But it is a weird stipulation where it's normal escape rules plus the pin.
Yeah, plus the ref can't be
The ref's not in there. It's very, very strange. Quinn's openly cheering for Tatanka this whole match, by the way.
Basically.
More chops and a boot to the face by Luger on a charge, but Tatanka with more chops.
Yeah.
Now, I need to mention here, Tatanka lost like his decorative like
dangly thing.
Dangly belt skirt.
Yeah, that he always had. So now he looks like Stone Cold.
He's
or
got
something.
Black tights under it. Yeah. He looks better.
He looks cool.
He looks like a more of a threat.
Yeah.
Luger with a very shitty bulldog, not Davey Boy Smith, and then a vertical sue play for two.
Right.
Big power slam by Luger for two, and then Tatanka comes back with an inverted atomic drop. Who is he, Bret Hart? And then he heads up to the top of the cage, and again, Vince says he's running away.
Bullshit. That's how you win. What is he?
That is part of the rules.
It's literally the rules. Like,
I know, it's true.
Oh, what a coward.
Then Luger gets him down and goes to the second rope and connects with the steel plated forearm, might I add.
Foreign object.
That's an American object.
A Native American.
And finally, mercifully, good God Gertie, it is all over.
It's finally over. The feud is over.
And we can never talk about this again.
The guy
please.
Who shouldn't have won.
And then he's teaming up with a Brit.
Yeah, that's another thing. Like, he's a basically, he's a Benedict Arnold now. Like, I'm surprised Tatanka didn't say this.
Maybe he did. I don't know.
He's literally turning to a red coat the next week. And he knows about it, too.
And he knows
it's
already.
Scheduled.
Everyone knows. It's a scheduled red coat.
Everything about this is screwed up, Joe. It's all screwed up.
Speaking of screwed up, we go to a weird vignette promo.
This is
with like Salt and Pepper in some weird recording studio, and some guy's like, hey, what are they saying on that side? So he like raises the volume
right.
of their
mic. And
then
mic. Like Salt and Pepper's like, oh, Bret Hart's so hot.
They're getting like all wet about Bret and Razor and Diesel.
Yeah, it's like,
and
what?
Then that's it.
What are they talking about in here?
Girlfriend, I am in heaven.
Oh, yes. That Razor Ramon is just footing with my chismo.
It made me want to shoot.
Big Daddy, come to mama.
You so crazy.
Make you get hot, make you work up a sweat.
But Bret Hart, did you see him?
Yes, what a man.
What a man. Ooh,
but then when they come back, Vince has like the proudest look on his face. Like, wow, we're so relevant. You see that? It's like almost like he wants to like nudge JR. It's like, you see that Salt and Pepper, those celebrities over there, they like wrestling. It's like, this is crap. No one gave a shit about wrestling in 1995.
Absolutely.
We were like the outcasts. I could tell you for a fact that
nobody
like brag that you were watching like King Kong Bundy and the Million Dollar Corporation or some bullshit.
You didn't brag about that hot comma match you saw on Raw last night.
This sucks.
It wasn't. Yeah. It was not cool to be a wrestling fan, at least in our parts, until around 98.
Yeah, but
it took a long time.
Yeah, but according to Raw Turtleneck over here, it's like the coolest thing ever. Look at all the celebrities. NYPD Blue.
Yeah, Home Improvement.
Jenny McCarthy. And
she was cute back then,
right,
wasn't she?
But she wasn't like
she didn't matter.
Singled out like talking about wrestling.
And Pamela Anderson wasn't on singled out with, well, Hogan was on Baywatch. Hogan was on Baywatch.
Oh, well.
The WCW guy.
Right.
Remember that one where he like picks up a
Yeah, but that's because of WCW's like connection to everything.
I know.
Think they like partially funded Baywatch because it wasn't on like TBS or whatever.
It was syndicated.
Yeah.
But remember when they filmed the Baywatch cameras were filming Bash at the Beach 95? Use in a Baywatch episode where Hogan fought Vader on Baywatch?
Horrible.
That is something we should review.
Well, we'll see.
That needs to get reviewed. Folks, remind us. Someone put it on the spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Race to the spreadsheet right now and put it on there so we don't forget, okay?
Right, okay.
Please, someone out there, put it on there. The Hulk Hogan Baywatch episode. I want to review that.
Okay.
Have you seen it, Quinn?
Maybe.
I saw it as
a
kid.
I used to watch Thunder in Paradise, but I'm
Why?
Not sure about this. Well, because it didn't have Sting in it or something sometimes. Did it?
The singer?
No. No, not that Sting. The other Sting.
Okay. So
this show's not even over yet.
No.
We're talking about something else.
We unfortunately have a little bit left. So Vince, after his proud, shitty face there, like Quinn referred to, cuts to
Bret Hart in front of a whiteboard.
This is so stupid.
And he's like, you know, I'm going to beat Mr. Bob Backlund at the WrestleMania. Here's my cartoons I drew about Owen because I'm going to beat him tomorrow night.
You didn't put this in the notes, but there's a funny thing here.
Yeah.
So he like drew these cartoons and you could tell he spent a little time on them. There's like, it looks like a pterodactyl on a pencil or something. I don't know.
Decent cartoonist.
Yeah, I don't know what this is, what it's even supposed to be.
It doesn't matter.
But like, you could tell he like drew this.
Yeah, he did.
But when they clip to it, they literally show it for like a half of a second and then like clip away from it.
So here's what I drew.
And then it's like, it's in that like weird like 90s like shaky cam. Like, oh, look how cool. And then it just like
goes. ESPN 2 cam.
All in like the span of like 3 seconds.
I'm going to beat you on and I'm going to beat you back.
What a throwaway thing for him to draw.
Really?
That. Yeah.
He looked like he didn't give a shit about that promo, too, by the way.
So he just woke up. You know how they, like, make them show up early? They're just, like, killing time.
Yeah, exactly. Now, that fruity WrestleMania theme plays underneath all of this, by the way, which kind of lowers the intensity.
Yeah, why not just play the WrestleMania theme, not the, like, alternative alternative?
And that's it. Vince and JR bid us a fond farewell. Now, there's a quick epilogue.
Yes.
And then we'll wrap up here.
It started from a conversation I had with you.
I was mentioning to Quinn that I could have sworn Gorilla Monsoon had something to do with all this, right? That was the first thing.
And the other thing was, like, I was like, this had to be, like, filmed at the same time of whatever Raw that they were hyping afterwards.
Right.
Like, there's no way that they just did another Raw.
So, Quinn, you checked, right? And on the March 27th Raw...
Right. I just turned it on. We didn't really watch it or anything.
And it turns out we're both right. Not only is it taped from the same place at the same time, but Gorilla Monsoon is now with JR at that same desk.
Yes. So I'm so confused because, first of all, Gorilla's like, we're at the thing. Raw.
But then there's a studio with Vince and Todd.
Right. So now they're like away from all of this or something.
Yeah, Vince separated himself from that.
Like, is this all part of the facade again that like this was live and the Raw was live and everything's live?
It makes no sense. I have no idea.
They really just moved Vince off camera so it would, that nobody could tell that it was in the same area.
Is that what it was, right?
It's all just part of the whole like thing.
That's the only thing I can think of.
And they bring Gorilla in with like the shitty red jacket from like 1988. He looks so out of place. Like, it's like they like transported Gorilla from like prime time, like through a time machine. And he's like, oh, we're here. What is this, Raw? Where's Brain?
Where's Brain? Yeah. Now, by the way, this was all taped on March 13th, 1995.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Okay. And
so it was some time travel here going on.
There was 13 days between this and the Sunday Night Slam and 2 weeks between the Raw. So there was a live Raw, but yes, there was the Sunday Night Slam was taped here and a bunch of Monday Night Raws were taped here.
How much is a bunch? Like six?
Four.
That's still
four Raws were done here. And three, excuse me, and Sunday Night Slam. So overall, Quinn, you know,
this was weird.
Yeah. I mean, it's not good, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Good would not be a fair way to say this.
I will say this. At the very least, we can sleep at night knowing what the conclusion was to Lex Luger versus Tatanka.
Very fair.
After like 45 episodes of this show.
Plus specials.
That could be years, 45 years of episodes.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
At least we finally have concluded that. And we want to thank our mysterious masked friend over there
for sending us
this tape in the mail.
Maybe he sent it in the same time machine Gorilla used to transport himself to
jacket!
That rock. Here's my jacket!
Hi, Jim Ross!
Yeah. Yeah.
But overall, it was it wasn't good.
It was a thing that happened.
I liked seeing Barbarian.
Yeah.
That was nice,
great.
Right?
I did not like seeing the $1 million corporation like plastered all over this.
I never do.
Yeah.
No, they're not good.
And they stink.
And Bam Bam was so wasted. And he was a talented guy, but
This is literally the height of Bam Bam. Like, he never gets a bigger moment than this.
No, I mean, unless you count ECW beating Taz.
No.
That's the only
He had mainstream, like, people knew who he was because they knew who LT was.
They knew who LT was, yep. Well, folks, we thank you for knowing who we are, and we thank you for always joining us every single week to talk about the world of retro wrestling. We will, of course, be back next Monday, August 28th. And Quinn, did you know that the day after that will be my birthday, August 29th? So that'll be interesting.
Love to get you presents.
Exactly. In the meantime, feel free to check us out on Twitter at OVP Podcast. You can email us at OVPPodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to check out our Facebook group,
ask to join it. We will approve you. And check out our website, ovppodcast.com, for all the links to everything. Send us your suggestions. Let us know if you have any ideas. Quinn, you got anything else, or are we good here?
I got nothing.
All right. Well, folks, we will have something for you next week. Thank you so much. Have a good rest of your day. Have a good rest of your week.
See ya.
I got news for you, pal. People like you are a dime a dozen. Somebody like me comes across once in a lifetime, and at WrestleMania 11, the fans of the World Wrestling Federation are going to see a once in a lifetime performance out of the Heartbreak Kid. You know it. They know it. I know it. And you, more than anybody, McMahon, most assuredly knows it. The Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, will go over.
Will you stop?